Yo, check this out, man.
Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution.
This week in radical history for the week starting September 1st. Inspiration came from the Slingshot organizer. Radical info was found at the Daily Bleed website, and some audio was borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes. Hey!
This week in radical history for September 1st, 1921, the Battle of Blair Mountain was the largest organized armed uprising in America labor history and led directly to the labor laws currently in effect in the United States of America. In a traditional fashion, President Harding would order federal troops in and they would drop bombs from planes to end the strike. Also on September 1st, 1939, Germany invades Poland, start of World War II. To quote Hermann Hesse, "Of course the soldiers who die in the war are worthy of our deepest sympathy. Many of them did great things and suffered greatly, and in the end they paid with their lives. But that does not make them heroes. The common soldier, at whom an officer bellows as he would a dog, is not suddenly transformed into a hero by a bullet that kills him. To suppose that there can be millions of heroes is, of course, itself an absurdity. The obedient, well-behaved citizen who does his or her duty is not a hero. Only an individual who has fashioned his or her self-will, their noble, natural inner law, into their destiny can be a hero." Hermann Hesse. Lastly, for September 1st, 1987, protesting American arms shipments to the Contras by blocking military trains, San Francisco activist S. Bryan Wilson loses both legs below the knees when the train fails to stop. Now that's a hero.
Monsieur R, Oria, Mr. Frankie, Kiki La Record, L'International, 2006.
This week in radical history for September 2nd, 1872, the Hague Congress of the First International is held. It is here that Marx and Engels determined it is better to kill the International than allow the growing anti-authoritarian influence to gain control. Under the thumb of Karl Marx, the Congress confirms the principal resolution of the London Conference and takes to task the anarchists and their, quote, divisive, unquote, activities, i.e. anti-authoritarian activities. It expelled the representatives, including Mikhail Bakunin, from the International on the 7th.
Although they offer us concessions, change will not come from above. So come, brothers and sisters, for the struggle carries on. The International unites the world in song.
More items for September 2nd, 1981. UN Human Rights Commission rules that Canadian Indian Act violates international human rights. The problem of the First Nation tribes in Canada and the gross violation of human rights and treaties throughout Canada fight on to this day. Also in 1993, San Francisco mayor starts arresting Food Not Bombs volunteers. Their crime, feeding the homeless. This week in radical history for September 3rd, 1860, William Walker, a U.S. citizen who once set himself up as dictator of Nicaragua, invades Honduras with his own private army. Once he arrives, he reestablishes slavery. Also on September 3rd, 1897, Emma Goldman begins lecture tour in Providence, Rhode Island, and speaks at two open-air meetings attended by thousands. The then-mayor warns Goldman that she'll be arrested if she speaks at open-air meeting again. Despite the prohibition, Emma continues to lecture. Speaking of Red Emma, 12 years later in 1909, the mayor of Burlington, Vermont, prevents Emma Goldman from speaking anywhere in his city. Accompanied by Ben Reitman, Emma is attempting to exercise her supposed free speech rights in a short lecture tour in Massachusetts, Vermont, Rhode Island, and is harassed nonstop everywhere she goes. Also on September 3rd, 1915, Australia, Wobbly Tom Barker is arrested for his anti-war poster. Quote, "Workers, follow your masters, stay at home," unquote. Anti-recruiting efforts finally gave him 12 months of hard labor, but he quickly released within 3 months following a series of fires in stores and factories. No cause and effect there at all. Also on this date in 1954, the Espionage and Sabotage Act authorizes the death penalty for peacetime sabotage. Also, Congress passes a bill to revoke the citizenships of persons convicted of conspiracy to overthrow the government. These laws that are so loosely worded that governmental abuse of this law abounds. Also on September 3, 1974, former Nixon attorney John Dean enters prisons for the Watergate crimes. Now he's a criminal attorney, proving once again that once you're in the team, you'll do fine, like criminals such as Ollie North or war criminal Henry Kissinger. Do the crime and you'll do just fine. Also on this date in 1991, 25 workers die in a fire at the Imperial Food Processing Plant, Hamlet, North Carolina. 19 were single mothers. A non-union plant, it had not been inspected by the federal or state agencies for 11 years. Despite 3 minor fires earlier in the year and other obvious dangers, the fire exits remained locked. One of the worst disasters of its kind, reminiscence of the Triangle Garment Factory fire in the early 1900s. Also on this date in 2001, South Africa, U.S. and Israel walk out of U.N. conference on racism. Of course they would. Lastly, for September 3, 2003, thousands log on to blow up a virtual bush. This online game, pitting defecating peace doves, the player, against American President George W. Bush, is attracting thousands of play a day, including American government departments. Launched last week by the South African student website Get a Life. Quote, "We're able to monitor where the hits are coming from," says Andy Hadfield of Get a Life. He adds, "The game is very popular in Germany, England, South Africa, and France. You win when Bush explodes into a nuclear mushroom, or lose when Rumsfeld's missiles hit your pooping doves once too often."
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, September 4th, in 1781, a group of 46 settlers founded the city of Los Angeles, 12 years after the Spanish began their conquest and occupation of California. 40 years later, Mexico took control of the city after having gained their independence from Spain, 25 years after it was snatched up by the United States in their quest for manifest destiny. The American city of Los Angeles later became the setting for events such as the exclusion and internment of Japanese American citizens, the Watts riots, the mass criminalization of people of color, intense gang violence, and the destructive crack epidemic. I wonder how things might have been had Spain and Europe stayed on their side of the Atlantic. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
This week in Radical History for September 4th, 1886, legendary Apache surrenders to General Nelson Miles at Skeleton Canyon, Arizona, ending the last major U.S.-Indian conflict. Geronimo led a small band of men, women, and children out of a forced internment camp on the San Carlos Reservation, successfully evading thousands of U.S. and Mexican troops over the next 18 months in the Southwest Wilderness. Also on September 4, 1903, Cripple Creek, Colorado, where mine owners are trying to bust a labor union, as police and deputy sheriffs are relieved their duties and all citizens are required to register their firearms, as Governor Peabody sends in the militia. Then in 1904, they seize a local sympathetic newspaper and round up strikers into bullpens and take them to the Kansas border and abandon them. General Sherman Bell of the Colorado National Guard shouted, "Habeas corpus, hell, we'll give them postmortems." This week in Radical History for September 5th, 1877, Great Sioux warrior Crazy Horse is murdered. Crazy Horse and his starving people had peacefully surrendered to U.S. Army on May 6th. Crazy Horse was assassinated on orders of a local reservation agent, bayoneted in the back by U.S. soldiers while in custody at Fort Robinson, Nebraska. Also on September 5, 1882, first American Labor Day observed, 30,000 workers march in parade sponsored by the New York City Central Labor Union. Also on that date in 1911, pupils desert the classroom and parade in the streets after a Lily boy is punished for passing around a note urging his friends to strike against corporal punishment. In the next fortnight, schools in over 60 major towns and cities will come out in solidarity.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
Also on that date in 1917, the Palmer Raids begin. Federal agents attack Industrial Workers of the World, IWW halls and offices in 48 cities across the nation. Federal agents conduct coordinated raids, seizing records, destroying equipment and books, arresting hundreds of wobbly activists for the crime of labor organizing and, quote, obstructing, unquote, World War I. This is done without warrants and with total disregard for civil liberties and legal rights. In December of 1919, the Palmer agents gathered 249 people of Russian origin, including well-known radical leaders such as Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, and placed them on a ship bound for the Soviet Union. During one of the raids, more than 4,000 individuals were rounded up in a single night. All foreign aliens caught were deported, with no requirement that there be any evidence against them under the provision of the Anarchist Act. All in all, by January of 1920, Palmer and Hoover had organized the largest mass arrest in U.S. history, rounding up at least 10,000 individuals. Two more items for September 5th, 1989. George Bush I announces a $7.9 billion anti-drug plan. George uses a bag of crack purchased across the street from the White House as a prop to show how ubiquitous drugs are. Later, it was revealed that a DEA agent had to lure a drug dealer there. Why he didn't score the crack from his drug-using son, George II, is unknown. Lastly, for September 5th, 2005, Common Ground Collective offers solidarity, not charity, to survivors of the Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. They are the first and for a long time the only aid group in the devastated New Orleans area and harassed by cops for weeks.
I went down to New Orleans with some residents and activists of that devastated area. I plugged into the Common Ground Collective.
Of all the problems of racism and classism that were existing down here before, what happened down here was whole series of human rights violations against people of the Gulf Coast perpetrated by the city, state, and federal governments in conjunction with many national and international-based relief organizations.
That lack of organization from the government and what they're kind of where they're falling through, what you've seen where they fall through at?
Well, from what I've seen, it seems to be very bureaucratic in terms of getting supplies to any of the relief centers. You have to be able to prove your ID of residency. You need to prove that you're from the area. Most people lost most of the paperwork since Katrina and Rita had hit. Go to a federally run relief center. Your chances of getting supplies are next to nothing.
It's a class war that's being waged down here. Folks around the country have to remember that just because, you know, CNN or Fox News is saying, oh, all services are 100% open down here, that's a crock of and it's a matter of blatant lies being perpetrated against the people of New Orleans saying, oh, they're all hunky-dory now with their whole neighborhoods that don't have power, that don't have water.
Between the military checkpoints and the curfews that would change on a whim of the authorities, the curfews, you'd get a different answer whoever you asked, because there were no military, there were no police here in some places for the first 3, 6 to 8 days. There was none of that presence on the ground. And then as soon as the military was here, they were acting like the checkpoints were necessary to keep out looters. I was like, you missed the boat. You're too late. You're lying. You're hypocritical. You're just wrong.
It's really important that people get down here if they can. I mean, this is a place where people are needed. I know that the Red Cross and FEMA are saying they don't need more bodies. And the reason that they're saying that is because they don't want people coming down here. They don't want people to know what they're doing. They don't want people to see the atrocities that are being committed every day. They don't want people to see the damage. They don't want people to really realize the war that's being waged right now, the war for New Orleans that's being fought.
Had been intimidated to force to give over her key, and her and her 4 children were out on the street, and she was crying. And we can't get in contact with that woman. We wish we could. So here we've got these landlords that are going around the law, bullying, intimidating, bluffing people out. Construction crews over here, contractors, all these things. And they're telling 75-year-old women that they might get hit by trucks. It's just, you know, veiled threats. And
around here, I look in an apartment, they say $1,000 for deposit, $1,000 for rent. I am a person clean house. The people not come back yet. I don't have enough money for pay that apartment's very expensive for me. I don't have place to go.
The need is still here, even in Algiers, where a lot of the community businesses aren't open, and it's 100 times fold that in huge swaths of this town, like in the 9th Ward, where almost nobody's back because there's no infrastructure set up there. So thanks again for all your efforts, and Common Ground's an awesome place, and I hope people get a chance to come down and check it out. And
this is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, September 6th, in 1876, race riots erupted in Charleston, South Carolina, after a hostile encounter between two opposing political parties. This occurred toward the end of the Reconstruction era when many black citizens were intensely frustrated by the government's failed attempts at racial equality. That night, in Charleston, a crowd of progressive black organizations armed themselves and confronted a group of black conservative politicians who they felt betrayed their race. When a number of whites attempted to interfere and side with the black conservatives, the crowd grew angry and set out on a two-day rampage, assaulting white people in the streets, resulting in the death of one white man. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Also on September 6, 1901, President William McKinley, shot by professed anarchist Leon Chasgoods, police claimed that Chasgoods was inspired by one of Emma Goldman's lectures, and she is arrested in Chicago a few days later. Eventually, the case against her was dropped. Also on September 6, 1963, four little black girls killed in Birmingham, Alabama. A racist white supremacist church bombing in which the defendants finally came to trial in May 2000, 37 years later. This week in radical history for September 7, 1972, White House tapes reveal President Nixon went the extra, quote, legal mile, unquote, to get dirt to ruin Senator Edward Kennedy, who Dick considered a future contender for president. Today, Nixon tells the aides to play spies amongst the Secret Service detail assigned to protect Kennedy. Quote, plant one, plant two guys on him, Nixon said. That would be very useful, and he remarked ecstatically, quote, we might get lucky and catch the son of a beep, ruin him for 76. It's going to be fun. That's your president's for you. On this date in 1977, in Wisconsin, first judicial recall election, outraged Dade County citizens vote Judge Archie Simonsons from office. Simonson called rape a normal male rejection of provoking female attire in modern society's permissive attitude towards sex, which is why he said he sentenced a 15-year-old to just 1 year probation for raping a 16-year-old. More sexual assaults occurred on September 7, 1991. Navy pilots sexually assault dozens of women at Tailhook Convention in Nevada. To this day, it is reported that 25 to 40% of all women entering the military will be sexually assaulted before leaving the service. Also on September 7, 1998, right-wing religious zealots firebombed two abortion clinics in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Despite the long and recent history of killing of abortion doctors and supporters, the FBI will have four times as many agents looking into Earth Liberation and animal liberation organizations than the doctors that are being killed. To this date, no ELF or ALF activities have ever killed anyone, though they label them as domestic terrorists. Lastly, in 2002, UN Human Rights Chief Mary Robinson accused the U.S., Russia, and China of hiding behind the war on terrorism to trample civil rights.
Stand up, all victims of oppression, for the tyrants fear your might. Don't cling so hard to your possessions, for you have nothing if you have no rights. Let racist ignorance be ended, for respect empires fall. Freedom is merely privilege extended unless enjoyed by one and all. So brothers and sisters, for the struggle carries on. The international knowledge unites the world in song.
That was Billy Bragg's International, and this has been This Week in Radical History, produced out of the Gleekly Studios. Thanks to the Radio Roots crew at WBAI New York for some of the audio I used in this week's show. Thanks to the Slingshot organizer and the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website for some radical info. And thanks for all those kind emails regarding this labor of love, the best kind of labor there is. So until next week, as always and forever, I'm yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.
Come greet the dawn and stand beside us. We'll live together or we'll die alone. In our world poisoned by exploitation, no sooner will take on, they must give. And then the vanity.